So today we're reading Yeshua chapter 2. As we've discussed, this chapter is one more part in the beginning stories, the stories even before the conquest of the land. It's the stories of the arriving at the land, the stories of the travel, we could call it in some sense, as we'll see in the next chapter. It can be seen in some sense almost as a continuation of the travels in the desert, which are always defined by going through different steps of masa'ot, different travels, right? They travel from here to there, from there to here. And this, the last travel, this or like the last travel, the last step, the last station where they were in the Midbar is Arvis Moav. And now we're all about these first few chapters of Sefer Yeshua are about the next travel, which is from Arvis Moav into the land, into Gilgal and into Yericho, which would be the next story, the first war that Yeshua fights. Now, before that, in order to prepare that, they know they're going to go into the land and into Yericho specifically. This was the first city they're going to conquer because it's the first city across from where they were sitting in Moav, in Arvis Moav. So we have this story of two Meraglim that Yeshua sends from Shittim. Shittim is, again, Arvis Moav, the same place where they are. And he sends them to check out Yericho, to check out the land. Now, obviously, everyone that reads the story of the Meraglim recognizes that this is some sense of tikkun, some kind of rectification for what happened with the Meraglim in Midbar. And we can note many differences between this story and the story in Parsha Shlach, where Yeshua was one of the two Meraglim, as we discussed, that didn't make the thing worse, didn't come back with bad news, didn't make people scared and break their morale, so that's why they were in the Midbar for 40 years. And here they're having Meraglim, in some sense, for practical purposes, in order to find out about the city. That's the Ramban claims in Parsha Shlach, where he claims that the Meraglim were not, as it seems from the problem, from the sin that they did, from their things that they said in the end, that they were there to check if the land was really as good as they were promised. That's not what Meraglim are really about. Meraglim are just scouts. They're to find out, where do you go? Where's the door of the city? What's going to be the best place to break in? And so on. But they didn't actually answer that. But in reality, also these Meraglim don't, at least not from what we read, not in the Pesach. They might have done such things. They might have done some reconnaissance and find out where the weak points are, like Yosef said, right? Meraglim are literally says Erva Soret. You're finding the weak points of the land, where it's going to be conquered, things like that. But what we actually see these Meraglim coming back is with the precise opposite message that the earlier Meraglim came back with. And it's, I think, even explicitly said here to be a counter to that, because it's not only saying that currently the people of the land are afraid. Of course, they didn't go to the same place. They went to Yericho. The Meraglim went to Hebron. Maybe that's the difference. But it's saying that they're scared of us, and they're scared of us and of our God since the times of the Kriyas Yamsef. It's really much, very much echoing, as we'll see, very much echoing the language and the style that it says in Shir HaSayama about how all the people around are namoigu, they're afraid, they're scared, they lose their entire hope, their entire strength, their moral strength, they're lost. So it's very much explicitly anti. It's not only like at this stage there was already Meraglim that told us good tidings, good messages. It's already, it's contradicting what Moshe's Meraglim said. So I think that although we could meet it as being more simple, more practical, while at least from the result of the first Meraglim, we think that those Meraglim were not just practical. They gave a report that said that originally was a bad idea to go to this land. I think a better reading would be to think that these Meraglim are explicitly contradicting what those other Meraglim said about, not about if the land is good or bad, that's not the question, but about the more important thing, which Meraglim also agreed that the land is good. That's not really what they complained about. What they complained about was that the people there are strong and that they're not going to be able to conquer them. And these Meraglim explicitly claim, come back and bring back the message that the people are afraid and it will be easy to conquer them. They're given in our hand. Okay, so that's the general story. But we also, I think this story is very interesting and there's a lot like that makes us think about. But let's go through the structure of the story. So Yeshua sends from Shittim two people, Meraglim, and says Cheresh. I think Cheresh means silently, hiddenly. So I think that this also is a big difference between what Yeshua did and what Moshe did. Moshe sent Meraglim publicly, as he more or less explicitly says in Sefer Devarim. People asked for it. Everyone knew about it. Everyone was like following what's going on. Where are they? When they're coming back? And when they came back, they explicitly said that they returned They returned. They returned. Their word, they gave the answer to everyone. And these Meraglim very explicitly were not. They were sent by Yeshua himself, and they reported back to him himself. And this is probably something useful. Of course, we need some spies, but we don't need everyone to know everything all the time. The whole point of spies is to be a secret. And here it was a secret, not only, apparently, I don't have a clear 100% proof, but not only it's a secret, right? Spies are secret relative to the people they're spying on, but it's also a secret relative to the people they're spying for. As spies also nowadays act usually, because if people find out, it will tip off the other side, and here they're closer already. So probably that's another simple reason why it had to be done secretly, quietly. And Yeshua tells them, he gives them the command, gives them the instruction, go see the land and see Yericha. And again, doesn't say exactly, not like Moshe that gave detailed instructions, what they should see, and so on. Just told them, see. And we assume that they understand themselves what to see. And this is part of the silence, part of the less words, less public words given here than in the story of Moshe, because they're doing things with more discretion this time. And they do, and they actually do it with more discretion, unlike the previous Meraglim that went and seems to have made some kind of ruckus. They went and they took some fruit, and maybe people noticed, and they explicitly discussed how the Anokim that they met there seemed to have noticed them and at least said something about them or relate to them. Here they're very explicitly trying to, you know, go undercover and find a silent way to find out what's going on. So they go and they find a house of a Isha Zonah. There's a conflict in the Mefarshim to read this literally as a prostitute, or maybe Zayna means something like Mleshen Mezaynas, like some owner of a tavern, or like a place where people they eat, or like a hotel, something like that. I don't think there's such a big difference in these two things if you think about it. But I think the Ibn Ezra very strongly claims that Zayna always means a prostitute. And I think that's the more reasonable reading here. And it gives her name, Rachav. This is the first time and the last time it says her name. And here, later it says her name again. But in this story, this is the first and last time that she has a name. Nobody else in the story has a name. It's a very interesting thing to note. When you read Tanakh, people have names and don't have names. Here, it doesn't say the name of the Meraglim. It says Anoshim Meraglim. And alongside the rest, it's also the last time they're called Meraglim. And the rest of the story just says Anoshim, people, men. And the same thing with the woman. The woman has a name first here, Shma Rachav. And we'll hear her name later. But in the rest of the stories is just Haisha, the woman. And they sleep there. Vayishkov Shamas, not towards there, go to sleep there. Now, that this was probably their attempt to be undercover, to like this is their cover story. They're that is Zionist place. And they were probably assuming to somehow find out from the people there, somehow get some news, find out what's going on. Now what happens? Somehow the people of Yericho discovered. It doesn't say how they were discovered. That's an interesting question. How were they discovered? But they were discovered. It was said to the king of Yericho, again, no name, we don't know his name. The king of Yericho was told about these people. It says they were told also who they were. People have come, men have come tonight from Bnei Israel to Lachber Esoretz, which Lachber doesn't mean literally to dig, it means exactly this, to undermine, right? To find the weaknesses of the land. That's the job of Meraglim. So it's a mystery who told the king of Yericho. And the king of Yericho, it's told, he sends messengers to Rachav. Oh, yeah, sorry, here it has her name, but later, that's the last time. Sends to Rachav and says, bring out the people who have come to you because they've come to destroy the land. They've come to undermine the whole land. This is, remind us, the language of like, right? When someone is a guest, is a guest at someone, it's like he's under his protection. And then sometimes there's a demand, give him out. Reproduce the person, don't leave him under your protection. Give him over to us. Now, the woman does not do that. So it doesn't explain in this stage of the story why she doesn't do that. But what she does is, and she seems, it doesn't say in the story, but we have to assume that she somehow stalls for time. She doesn't let the king's men come in. In other words, apparently, and this is, I think, the simple meaning, apparently, they're respecting her house. It's her house, like they have a demand for her to give over the people, to release them from her custody, they shouldn't be under her protection. But as long as they're under protection, this is like they're executing a warrant. They didn't like do a no-knock warrant. They didn't walk into her house. They're standing outside and waiting for her to bring them out. And she like goes in as if she's going to go bring them or something. And she, instead of bringing them out, she hides them. And doesn't explain how she hides them or where she hides them. That we'll find out after we hear what she told the king's messengers. But she hid them. And she told the king's messengers, yes, they've come to me. And I don't know. I didn't know from where. So she claims ignorance, and maybe she was ignorant. She doesn't know that they were from Bnei Yisrael. If she would, she would have had to give them over. She would have to report them right away. So she didn't know. And then she says they were closing the door, the door of the city in the darkness. And the men left. And she doesn't know where she went. She says, "Well, go chase them. Maybe you'll find them, or you'll find them. You'll catch them. Go chase them." So this is also part of her strategy. She distracts the king's messengers. She says, "Oh, I know where they went." And she assumes, as we'll see later, she assumes that probably there was one direction which to run. So they could have, when she says they went through the gate of the city, they know exactly where to go chase them. So she's sending them in the opposite direction where the men are. And she, and that's how she got them off her back. She got them off the people to save them. And here the pasuk goes back and tells us like exactly how she hid them. So she had them under roof, hid them in some flax that was still from the stalks of flax that were there. Apparently, that's how people used to dry out on the roof some flax to make linen and so on. So she would she hid them amongst that. And meanwhile, the king's men are chasing them all the way back to the river, or back to the Yarden, where the Derech HaMaboros, and the places where they cross the Yarden, they close the gate after them. And so the gate is closed. So now she knows that the people, the king's messengers, they're not chasing them in the city. They're all out. They're chasing them on some kind of chase outside of the city. Now, before the two men, the two meraglim, the two spies, go to sleep, she goes up to the roof, and so to their hiding place, and she speaks to them. And this is the most important. And the whole story is here for this discussion, for this dialogue, which she tells them. She tells them this, and we were probably to understand that this is also why she's hiding them, which is why she's saving them. She says this. She says, "I know that Hashem," and now she says Hashem's name, Yitka Vavka, "has given you the land, and your fear has fallen upon us. We're all scared of you. And all the people that live in the house, all the inhabitants of the land, are nemoigu from them for you. They're melting, right? Or something like that. They're all scared of you. So not. And why are they scared? What caused us this fear? What caused us to think that your God has given you the land and we should be scared of you? Because you've heard what he did to the waters of the dead of the Yamsuf. He dried up the Yamsuf when you went out of Egypt. And we heard what you did to the two kings of Amori, which are on the other side of the Yarden, Sichon and Og, which you destroyed." So these are the two big victories that the people had over the Egyptians and the Yamsuf, over Sichon and Og, later in Arvas Moav, in Malchi Amori. And we've heard this, and our heart has melted. Nobody has power. L'koma idruach beish, the spirit of any man is not standing anymore for you. And this is all because we realize, and this is also very important for the pasuk to say, as we said in Shir Sayyam, we recognize that your God is the God in heaven and earth. This is Rechav's extreme declaration of faith in the Jewish God. And because she's heard that he gives the people victory over all their enemies. So therefore, she's saying, so basically, I know that you're going to win, but I don't want to be one of the losers. So she asked them to swear to her. She asked them, "Swear to you, to me, in the name of Hashem, in the name of this God, this strongest God, and do goodness with me, do chesed, and be kind with me and my family, Beis Avi, as you've seen many times, is a unit of family. It's like one unit below Mishpacha, so the lowest level of family, I think, what we call a nuclear family, or maybe an extended family, but something like that. Not more extended, not like a tribe or a clan. And give me a sign, give me a true sign that you will save me, and make sure that me, my parents, my brothers and sisters are still alive." So she might have been a Zionist, as she doesn't seem to have her own household yet. So she's a single woman. That's what we should assume from this story. But she does have parents and she does have siblings, and she's asking for them to all to be saved. And the people, since they're under her protection, if they don't agree with her, they don't really have a choice. But they agree. And they swear. And this is how they swear. They say, "Nafshenu tachtechem lamas." Our soul, our life is going to be, instead of yours, deserve death, if, as long as you give a condition, as long as you don't reveal us, right? You don't tell this thing, so you don't reveal what the deal we just had, or you don't reveal us now to the city, because that's their big fear, that she's going to tell on them, and they're going to be killed. And also, but maybe even later, as we see later, if she comes around and tells people, "Oh, there was this deal," then, you know, people can their people will have ways to make intrigues and so on and destroy the plan to conquer the city. So they promise her, they swear on their life, right? They don't swear on the name of Hashem, as she asked, or at least it doesn't say explicitly, but they swear on their life. They promise their life instead of hers as long as she fulfills her condition. And she says, yes, when God will give us the land, when Hashem will give us the land, we will do with you chesed. We'll do kindness, we'll do truth, you will be honest to your deal, and we will save you and your family. So now that she had this promise, so now she has a way, she needs to help them escape the city, because otherwise they're going to be stuck here. So she helps them escape. What does she do? She gives them a rope, she drops them through a window of her house. Now her house is in the chayma, in the wall of the city. The city has a wall, as we'll figure prominently in the next story, in the story of the conquest of Jericho. But her house was in the wall, and this is how in some ancient cities there were houses built within the walls of the city. So her window, the window of her house is sort of going out of the city. So if you climb with a rope out of the window, you're outside of the city. And she tells them the way she escaped, which she already set up before, right? She says, you go to the mountains on the other way. You hide for 3 days until the people chasing you will come back, and then you can go wherever you want. Because she sent them to chase them towards the Arden. She said, go the other direction. Go towards the mountain, which is to the west. And then you'll stay there for 3 days, and then you'll go back. And while the people that are looking for you will have already given up and given back into the city and go back. And that's what they do. They go, then one second before they do that, so now they say, okay, but now I don't have a clearly good explanation for why this is split like this, but after this, they added conditions to their promise. In other words, and in some sense, maybe this is the fulfillment of something she asked, because she asked for a ois emes, she asked for a sign that they will not destroy her family, and they give her this sign. So they tell her like this, if we've sworn to you to save your family, but we absolve ourselves of this oath, if, like this, we're going to come in back in this land, right, where our people are coming to conquer it, you're going to take this red thread, tikvas chet hasheni, a red thread, a line of thread or something, you will tie it in this window, which you've dropped us out. So it seems like this, they're just having this discussion with them already down on the ground, outside the window, and they're talking to her. Although, I think that's how we have to read it. And I think, although it seems not nice, it seems like this is why they're adding this condition here, because they were afraid of speaking at length, of adding conditions while they were in her house and they really needed her protection. Now they're slightly less, because they're already out of the city. They already have a plan to escape. Of course, she could still tell on them. She could still cause the people to go find them where they are, because she knows the direction that they're going, but they're somewhat safer. So they feel comfortable to sort of give their conditions of the deal that they made. And their condition is, you will hang this string, this thread, in this window, this precise window. So there's some nice symmetry here. In this window, which you're saving us through, you will hang this red string. And what you will do is, you will gather together your family, your brothers, your sisters, your parents, into your house. And now, like this, anyone goes out of your house, we're not responsible for him. It's his blood on his hand. But anyone who will stay in the house, it's his blood on us if he is harmed. So they're saying, we're going to take responsibility for saving you, but you have to give us a sign. And probably there's like a practical reason for this, right? Because how else are they going to remember where, or they're going to have to also communicate this to the other warriors, as we'll see later. They have to communicate this to make sure that her family isn't destroyed. So you're going to have this sign, and this is a secret sign, of course. She cannot allow to say this, and this they make an end condition. If you tell anyone this, again, we're free of our oath, because and then everyone will put a red thread and the sign won't be worth anything, right? She has to make sure it's a secret between them. It's a secret sign, a secret signal. And this secret signal will cause her and her family to be saved. And they take responsibility for that. And she agrees with that. She says, yes, that's how it is. And they go. And she actually puts this thread in the window. And maybe not now, but this is the story preempting us what she will do. And they follow her plan. They go to the mountain. After 3 days, they go back. And they come back to Yeshua ben Nun. They tell him the whole story. And the most important thing is, this is the end of the story. They tell Yeshua, Hashem has given our hands the whole land. Hashem has given the whole land in our hands, right? Because they see, how they know this? Because they see that everyone is so scared. And maybe also because they got even already, it was so easy to get a collaborator. Maybe they say there might be easy to get even more. I don't know. These are the two things. So we know that Hashem gave us the land because the inhabitants of the land are afraid from us. They're all scared of us. And therefore, this is the opposite, the precise opposite of what the Meraglim of Moshe said. They were the ones that melted away, that were scared from the people of the land. Now they're saying the people of the land are scared of us. They're all melted before us. They have no power. They have no courage. And this is their message. And it doesn't say what Yeshua does with this message. Maybe Yeshua then passes along the message to the rest of the people, which seems to be something he should be doing, because remember, Yeshua probably himself, or Yeshua himself, like we saw earlier in the previous chapter, Yeshua himself might have needed, Chizek might have needed this boost for his morale to know that he's not doing a crazy thing, to know that it will be safe. So he has this message, and with this, the story can continue.